All right, welcome back. Bryce Sable just arrived in the studio, so we can all relax. The Rolling Stones. Enjoy the bumper music tonight. And also, Bryce is going to be with us for the next three segments live in the studio. So if you have any questions or any comments that you would like to get into Bryce and join in on this conversation, follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. Very simple, at JChurchRadio. Twitter is literally live to my left. If you could see into the studio right now, you would see exactly what's going on. So at JChurchRadio. And make it good, and maybe your tweet will get read on the air. All right, Bryce is here. When we come back, we're going to be joined with the one and only Bryce Sable. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. And one of the things that I talk about a lot here on the show, I need to drive this home. I am alone in a building on the fifth floor in a dark studio with my engineer, Nathan. I have a producer here tonight. It's Donna. But basically speaking, we are alone in a 25-story office building. Nobody here. Studio is dark. I'm just doing my thing with a microphone, right? And it is such a treat to have somebody live in the studio. And so tonight, Bryce Sable is here. Now, he was a winner of the Writers Guild Award for screenwriting. He has created and produced five primetime television series, including the UFO thriller Dark Skies, and he brought me the DVD collection. I have it here in the studio. And The Crow. He was the first writer since Rod Serling elected to serve as the chairman CEO of the Television Academy, you know, the Emmys. He has taught screenwriting as an adjunct professor at the USC School of Cinematic Arts. He reported on air as a CNN correspondent, won multiple awards for investigative reporting for PBS. His latest alternative history book, which I have here, is Once There Was a Way. And it's a novel about the Beatles staying together, you know, like they never broke up. He is also developing Unidentified, and it's about that race to break the Roswell story in New Mexico back in 1980, and Captured, about Betty and Barney Hill. Now, his book, AD After Disclosure, with Richard Dolan, is one of, not only considered a classic, but it's a book that I use for reference, and I refer to not only this show, but my other show, Fade to Black, all the time. And it's a pleasure and an honor to welcome live in the studio, Mr. Bryce Sable. Bryce, how are you?
I'm great. It's always great to be here on Coast to Coast because it's one of the great radio audiences in the whole country, you know, and I'm ready to have some fun tonight. Let's do it.
What do you think about the facilities here? Pretty swanky, huh?
It's like Die Hard in a recording studio.
Right now. Yeah, exactly. And now I wanted to, a couple of things, and you've been on Coast many times, but the thing that I find most amazing about you and your career in Hollywood is if you want to green light a film in Hollywood, you write an alien flick, right? Right? They come out every single month. But my point is the opposite is true in reporting, and you've done both. If you want to get out of journalism or CNN or Fox or whatever, do a UFO story, and that's the last day you'll be at the network, more than likely. And you've lived in both worlds.
I have lived in both worlds. And if you, I guess at CNN, they at least warmed up to the subject when Larry King started talking about it.
Right.
But it was kind of put only in that section, in that show. It wasn't something that came up in the news very often. And I think that's probably still true. I don't think that people are looking for their regular reporters to be breaking UFO stories or even talking about it. And
right.
If they do talk about it, they tend to smile about it, and they tend to call people UFO buffs or conspiracy theorists, and it's not taken as a serious topic.
And for you, not only as an author, but a screenwriter and a reporter, are you known in Hollywood as the UFO guy?
I think for a period of time when Dark Skies was on, I may have been the flavor of the month as the UFO guy, but there's lots of projects out there and some good ones. I know Robert Zemeckis is doing Blue Book coming up. And people are always pitching ideas like that. I think the thing that made Dark Skies special is that it attempted to weave in actual UFO cases into this fictional narrative, and you don't see much of that. You don't see people treating aliens being here on Earth, for example, as something that's a credible thing. It's just a science fiction story. And of course, you and I and most of your listeners would probably beg to differ with that characterization.
Well, the first time that I saw the commercial for Dark Skies, and they showed they had a flying saucer taking off, and I thought, this is for us.
Yeah.
Finally, it's here. Why didn't it have the legs that it should have?
It was on Saturday night before there were DVRs. Had there been DVRs back then, I think it would have probably been around for a while. It was, there's actually two reasons. There's that. Saturday night is not a night where traditionally people try to stay home. They actually try to get out. And if that's the case, if you're not recording the show and you miss something that has some sort of serialization in it, which is all the thing right now, you feel like you missed out. And so you erode your audience every week. So that's a problem. And there's... And it's not a problem anymore. Now people are binging. People would have binged it. The other, it's hard to say. It's really hard to say. It's audiences, it's taste, it's also ownership. At the time Dark Skies was on, it was part of NBC's Thrillogy Saturday Night. Dark Skies was not owned by NBC. The show that followed us was half owned by NBC. And the show that came at 10 o'clock was wholly owned by NBC. And guess what order they canceled them? Based right. on ownership.
Well, and what about the network executives? Were they into the UFO subject? Did they understand the importance of the show, and were they behind it?
Did they understand the importance of the show? Probably not in the sense of what you're asking, but they were interested in the topic, and we certainly treated it as a very credible topic when we went in to pitch it. And people, you do tend to get, when you're someone who's known for some of this as I've been, you get those questions where people say, so you really think this is real?
Right.
And I go, absolutely I do. And then they want to know more about it. And then it's usually promptly forgotten. Many executives and in studios and networks don't actually give it a lot of thought. I think that they see it only as like an alien invasion kind of possibility. They don't actually think that it might actually be happening. And that was what was so unnerving to some people about Dark Skies, because it, by taking on real cases from the 1960s, we were saying, you know, pay attention. Some of these are in fact real, and we'll tell you about them. And I think that is the lots of people like to talk about it. And in fact, as you well know, everybody is willing to speculate about, well, maybe we'll find intelligent life out there.
Right.
Maybe SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, will find a signal out in space proving that we're not alone.
Right.
We're willing to talk about that. We're willing to get excited about a microbe on Mars. But what we're not willing to talk about is the fact that they might be here now. And all I would say to people is, if you're willing to believe that there are aliens out there that would like to come here, let me flip that around. If you're willing to believe that we would like to go out there in search of aliens, which every science fiction show seems to think is true, certainly Star Trek would say that, then why wouldn't they want to do the same thing? Why would we not be of tremendous interest? And so I've kind of come over the years to believe that we are interesting. Earthlings are interesting. We have a highly technological society. People like to say, well, why would they want to bother coming here? We're just this backward, war-torn planet, and nobody would find that of interest. I've come to believe something a little different. I believe intelligent life must find other intelligent life profoundly interesting. We certainly do. Why would it be different for other intelligent life? So, since we have been technological for a long time now, I think it's reasonable to believe that some people out there have come here.
Well, you know, for probably 10,000 years, since the end of the last ice age, man has been standing out, looking at the stars, asking that question. What's going on out there? You know, are we alone? What happens when we die? Right? That's one question. The other one is, are we alone?
Those are the two big ones.
And so we have to only consider the one thing. E.T. on another planet is out looking at the stars, wondering the exact same thing. There is no other way to look at it. I did want to ask you this before we hit the break. A la carte, you know, Netflix and Amazon sure. Prime, has that given Dark Size a second life?
Not yet. I'd love it if it would, but I haven't heard too much about that. I don't actually own it, as you can imagine.
Right.
Shows are owned by the companies that make them. So Sony owns Dark Skies. So if Dark Skies was ever to make a comeback, Sony would have to be behind that. I've talked to them over the years. But the shows that come back tend to be the ones that were big hits. And Dark Skies was just an NBC show that right. went one season. But you raise an interesting point. We do live in a time where it's possible to restart anything or continue anything because there are other buyers out there.
Another generation now has access to it. You
Correct.
Know, on I have been catching up with Dark Skies over the last couple of months and going back and reviewing
sure.
it. Well, you know, so there's another audience out there that is exposed to it.
There always will be. I've sort of decided that I have to just keep my focus ahead of the headlights right now.
Right.
Instead of looking backward, I got to look forward because, again, I like to think about things I can control. I can't control that right now. I can pitch it. I can talk to people, but I can't force them to put something on the air. So I just am looking at other projects. As you mentioned, there's Captured, the Betty and Barney story, and Unidentified, the Race for Roswell story. Those explore many of the same themes that we talked about in Dark Skies, and they allow me to consider it that way. And also, as a book author, I'm allowed to pretty much write whatever I want. I don't have to sell that to anybody. I just have to write it. So that's good.
When I was auditioning for Hangar One, I sit down with the producers from History Channel, and I wasn't real. What I was interested in finding out was how much do they know about the subject, or is this just you know a network money play on a TV series?
What's the answer to that?
Right. So I asked. We're sitting in the boardroom, and I said, "Okay, anybody here, have a UFO sighting?" These network guys, right? And two of them raised their hands and said, "We're members of MUFON."
Oh,
I'm in. I'm okay. I'm all right with that.
Absolutely.
They understood. Now, did you have a network head come up to you and go, "Hey, you know what? By the way, I saw something."
I didn't have people who had actually had sightings themselves, or at least they didn't confide that to me. But I did have some enlightened network executives. John Landgraf was at NBC at the time. Now he runs FX. And John was very interested in the topic, and he respected it quite a bit. And so there are people out there, but they haven't all seen things. What I found instead is, as a consequence of actually doing a show about UFOs where people knew that I'd done it, I've had for the last, since it went off the air, I've had people come to me and say, "You did that show, right?" And I say, "Yes." And then they say, "You know, there's something that I never talked to anybody about." And then they proceed to tell me about their sighting because they figure I won't laugh at them and I'll respect their story. So that's where I hear a lot of stories.
Now, I'm going to throw you under the bus a little bit.
Okay.
Because it's one thing to, you know, be the president of the Academy or a New York Times bestseller, Richard Dolan, everything that you have done in TV series and screenwriting and feature films, CNN, all of that, right? But last year at the Roswell Festival, I'm hanging out, doing my thing, right, speaking,
yeah.
And up walks Bryce Sable. And I'm like, you're the real deal. You're out there hanging out. You're going to the conferences. You're speaking with people. And you're getting it done. That is exactly what you do, isn't it?
I try to stay current in the topic, and that means you got to get out and meet people. I am speaking this year at the IUFOC conference in Phoenix. I think you have to do that. If you want to go on a show like this, you have to have at least you can't be stuck in the past. You have to have a currency with what's really going on. And I'm fascinated by it. I don't think I'll ever not be fascinated by it. I want to know what's going on. As you said earlier, there are these two issues out there. Are we alone? Which I think the answer is we're not. And what happens after we die? And I don't have the answer to that one. But they're endlessly fascinating to me, as they are to you and your listeners, and I'll never give up on that.
Well, the point that you made earlier is an important one. What do we have here? Well, we have water, we have oxygen, we have life, we have trees, and if there is somebody doing a drive-by out through the solar system and they look out the window, they see this beautiful blue planet with lights all over it and cities and life. And what's not to like about that? And you are going to stop and take a look. We are doing the same thing with the Milky Way. We are looking for exoplanets every single day.
And we don't really have to justify this. I think that the evidence is pretty strong. Let me just put it out in this way. The least we can say is that at least some of those objects that are flying around in our skies right now and have been flying around in them are from someplace that isn't here, and they're being piloted by somebody that isn't us.
That's exactly right.
That's what I'm willing to say, and I'm willing to say that as strongly as possible. And that's what I say to people if I'm in a pitch or just casually talking to friends. I don't try to sell them that everything that's out there is true. I try to sell them on the fact that enough of it is true that we have an issue here, and it's time for all of us to at least start talking about it in a more respectful way. I am just tired of seeing responsible journalists smirk when they talk about flying saucers or UFOs, because it's not a topic we should be smirking about. Instead, it's a topic we should be trying to get to the bottom of.
Well, you wrote AD After Disclosure with Richard Dolan, one of the most respected voices in our community. And I want to ask you, going into the break, what is your definition of disclosure? Everybody has their own version of the big D. What's your definition?
I think mine is evolving with time. I would say at one point, I was trying to define big D disclosure as simply saying it's when somebody in a position of authority or power confirms what I just said, that some of those things flying around aren't ours and they're from someplace that isn't here. That would be disclosure. And frankly, it could come from a president, not likely, but it could come from a pope. It could come from the Chinese, the Russians. It could come about because of a mass sighting that forced those people to respond to it. There's a lot of ways that disclosure could come. We're talking about, and I'm sure we'll probably touch on this later, there are people who are always talking about disclosure and always saying it's imminent, and they're doing that right now. And they've been doing it for 70 years, so we'll see. Eventually, somebody's going to be right. The question is it now? I don't know. I hope so. I hope that before I shuffle off and find out the answer to your second question, which is what happens after we die, I'd like to know answer to the first question.
We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, live in the studio, screenwriter, author, Bryce Abel. And we're going to be taking your phone calls right after the break. Stay with us. All right, welcome back. So this is what we're going to do tonight. We're going to keep this interactive. Bryce Abel is live in the studio with me. So we're going to open up the phone lines for the rest of the night. Now, I want this to be an engaging conversation with all of us. So when you call in and you get through on the lines, just let Donna know what your question is going to be about, and we'll weave it in real time into our conversation here in the studio. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Such a pleasure to have somebody live in the studio with me. And that person tonight is Bryce Zabel. Now, Bryce, you had one of the most interesting Men in Black type of encounters in the history of all of ufology. And this was at your home. I'll let you tell the story. But I've got some follow-up questions that were sent to me via email to ask you. So I want to get to those. But it was a dark skies party at your house where a gentleman showed up that wasn't invited. Take it away.
Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you for letting me come into your studio, because my wife's been after me to get out of the house more, so this is terrific for me.
Well, what are you going to do after the show? You have to go
I'm
home.
I'm going home, and okay. I'm sleeping. I don't know what you do. You're probably so wired, you're up till the morning. But, this series was being launched by NBC and in September, and we had prepared the pilot. It was done. It was edited, but nobody had seen it. And we had a launch party for the series. About 200 people came out to our house, but they were all people who actually worked on the series. And in fact, we literally gave kind of a faux badge for Majestic 12 to everybody. But there was one guy at the party who didn't have a badge. And this guy, about 30-something, nice suit, looked khakis, a nice blue blazer, looked kind of like a nice dressed-up guy. He came to the party, and we said, "Who are you?" And he said, "Well, you know, I'm just a friend of the show, and the people I work with wanted me to come out and talk to you guys." He was talking about me and my partner, creative partner on that show, Brent Friedman. And what he had to say was, "We think you've done a good job with your pilot, but we have some comments on it," which struck me as completely odd because, yes, the network had seen it, and obviously the people working on it had seen it, but this stranger who's in my backyard is telling me he's seen it too, which I thought was strange. This led to the only thing I can compare it to, I guess, is what Tom DeLonge seems to be saying is had happened to him, and I believe he was throwing around Naval Intelligence, or somebody was throwing that around. I thought it was Tom. This guy ended up telling us that night at the party that he ended up drawing a little thing on a napkin that had this kind of weird-looking formula on it. And I said, "What is that?" And he said, "It's the secret of the universe. It's sound, light, and frequency," is what this guy said it was. And he said, "That's what this thing is all about." And it all seemed very strange, but I was hosting a party, so I didn't really have a lot of time to get into that. But Brent talked to this guy, and the guy wanted us to meet who he said were his people. So Brent set this up, and in the middle of our production, this guy brings two people to the studio where we were shooting. And Brent and I took about, I think it was about a couple to 3 hours with these people.
Were you guys shooting at Universal?
No, God, no. We were in a warehouse in North Hollywood that had, prior to our accompanying the place, had been used for shooting pornos in the Valley.
Well, I want the audience to know that the Valley here, Studio City, Burbank, North Hollywood, this entire area, when you drive down the road, any nondescript building, something is being shot inside of it. This is what we do here.
Well, I've shot a lot of things in warehouses. I've shot three series in Canada, all of them in warehouses.
Right.
That's the thing you do when you're not the A-team on the studio lot. But you have to save money, and that's one good way to do it, and you get a lot of space. So these guys came out. The two guys that he brought with him, I would say it were like mid-30s, looked very lean and military, said they were with Naval Intelligence, and proceeded to brief us, is what how they put it. And they held forth, and I wish I'd written it all down. I can't remember if I didn't because I was lazy or because I didn't believe them or because they told us not to. I really don't remember that detail, but I didn't write anything down. And I have kind of a notoriously awful memory for retaining vast quantity, so I don't remember all the details, but I will say these guys were incredibly convincing. If they were just blowing stuff, blowing smoke, then they had rehearsed it very well.
So you were read in for 2 hours.
They said that's what, and that's what they would imply. It seemed like what they were saying is, we're at the beginning of the series, so it seemed like what they were saying is, we want to make sure that you address some of the themes that we think should be in this series. It was all strange, but we'd already, remember, the series was about people getting read into Majestic 12.
And, sure.
And the series actually began with sort of an odd little thing as well, which we won't get into right now. But so these guys are here in this studio, and I've told this story before, and it always sounds kind of insane, but it's actually what happened. Toward the end, I just got antsy. I mean, I had a series to produce. I wasn't being paid to take meetings with people that might not be serious. I actually had, we were shooting and scripts were late and all the stuff that goes with the series. So I said, gentlemen, this has all been fascinating, but, you know, I have to leave. And they proceeded to basically say, we think you're ready to meet the big guy. And I didn't quite know what that meant, but they said it was an admiral on a ship someplace in Long Beach. And I said, you want us to come to Long Beach and get on this ship and meet somebody? And they said, not really. He can't meet with you on the ship. We'll meet with you on land. That sounded sort of vaguely odd, but okay, what's the details? And this is the part where it just gets so strange that it almost has a ring of truth because it's so ridiculous.
Right.
They said, you'll meet this guy at midnight in a cemetery.
Did you?
No.
Why not?
I just pushed back from the table. I have three children.
Right.
I'm not meeting anybody in a cemetery at midnight. That just sounds either like it's a cult murder that's about to happen, or I didn't know what. I just said, I'm out of this. Now, as the years have passed, people that have considered this with me have said, well, you missed your chance. You know, as you said, being read in, maybe we missed our chance to be read in. Maybe we would have been the Tom DeLonge, if you will, of that time. But it just seemed like if somebody wants to disclose something official to me, they don't ask me to meet him in a cemetery at midnight.
What were they wearing?
They it wasn't jeans. It was, again, kind of the civilian uniform, the khakis and a dress shirt kind of thing.
Yeah, trying to fit in kind of,
yeah,
look.
And they were really lean and athletic. And
right.
they looked military.
ID? Did they show you ID?
No.
Business cards?
Maybe. I honestly don't remember that detail. That's a great detail. Obviously, it kind of makes Brent and I not look as smart as we like to think we are, that we didn't check that more easily. And that the only reason I let some of that slide is you do have security on a set.
Right.
So we did have people who, and they were meeting. I wasn't asking him to meet in a cemetery. I was asking him to meet in a, you know, on at the studio lot, or not the studio lot, in the warehouse where we were doing the production. So I didn't feel threatened, and we also had security, as I said. So we just took the meeting, and I think we took the meeting in one respect, not thinking it was real, but thinking that at the very least it would be great for a few episodes.
Sure. Now, what did you see? Did they show you photographs? Did they show you some documents, or did they just talk?
They did not. They implied that they had everything and that if we played our cards right, they would. I was a little skeptical. I threw skepticism back in their face because I just thought, if this is what you purport it to be, then this is a very odd way for you guys to go about it. But I will say they did find my house and they did say they'd seen the pilot, and they probably weren't lying about that because they seemed to know a lot about it. That guy at the party did.
Now, there's urban legend about a vial of gold.
Well, I don't know if that's urban. I started that urban legend then, because what happened is when I was sort of saying, I'm very skeptical about this. I don't know who you guys are. This does seem a little strange to me. And I said, cut to the chase. What the hell is this all about? Why are you here? What's the deal? What's really going on?
Right.
The questions that we have right now, which is what's really happening here? And the guy said, well, I'll show you. And he pulls a little glass vial out of his pocket. You've seen them before. They're little sample things or whatever. It's a little glass vial with a black top on it. And he sits it on the middle of the table. I pick it up and look at it, and it's got gold in it. And in fact, I screwed up my own story because that's when I said, what is this? And he said, that's the secret of the universe. That's, no, I'm wrong again. I'm sorry. I want to get this right. They did say the formula on the napkin was the secret of the universe. And when the gold vial went on the table, he said, that's what this is all about.
Do you know,
which befuddles me. I don't know why he would say that.
I have a phone call coming in from Tracy Scoggins. You want to take it?
Sure. Tracy. Oh, my God.
Hold on.
Tracy.
Tracy, welcome to Coast.
Wow.
This is your old friend, Cat Grant. And I want to tell the audience, I'm a longtime Coast to Coast listener, that Bryce wrote my best Lois and Clark Superman episode called All Shook Up. There's a meteor plummeting toward Metropolis and the Earth. And not only did he write the episode, but he played the priest to whom I was confessing, thinking the Earth was coming to an end.
That is, thank you for remembering that. Thank you for saying that. What is really funny about that is, I think the only reason I got, and that's my only credit, I think, as an actor, because we got to the set and we thought we could shoot the thing without an actor. I think that it was all a money thing. Can we just do this dialogue with someone reading it off screen? And then they realized it's not going to look quite right. And the director said, Zabel, get over here. Read these lines. And so that was my big debut. But if I had to have a debut, I'd have it with Tracy Scoggins. So thank you very much.
Well, it was fun. And my character, not Tracy, because Tracy's a good girl, my character made inappropriate remarks to the priest, Bryce Zabel. And you hear him slam the door and go running down the hall.
Was he, did he, I just have to ask.
I'm just laughing. This is funny.
So did he have to wear the priest, the outfit?
Did you, Bryce?
I did. I don't think that, I know that if you look at the episode, you don't see much of me. I didn't make, apparently I didn't make a real good priest, but I think I had to wear the collar because there was the idea on over-the-shoulder, you'd see it.
Because it showed.
Yeah.
And Tracy, did he have his goatee with the collar?
I just remember he was, I'm a Catholic, and he was one of the best-looking priests I ever
had. That's what I'm talking about.
Very kind. I think I did not start rocking the official Jimmy Church beard style until after Lois and Clark. I think I was driven to that after Tracy said inappropriate things to me. I needed to do something.
Tracy, can I jump in really quick before we hit the break? You know what Coast to Coast is all about, right?
Absolutely. I'm a long-time listener, longer than I care to admit.
And that's where I was going, right? So have you ever seen, will you admit, have you seen anything strange in the skies?
I have.
Ooh, do tell.
I have. I've seen things that are inexplicable and that other people just sort of put their head down and mumble and scratch the right side of their head with their left arm.
And isn't it funny, and I'm sure you were listening to Bryce talk about this, that the entertainment side, film and television, it is okay to believe and to talk about UFOs. But when you are in broadcast or in journalism, that is a no-no. And there's a line in the sand, isn't there?
You're both right. There is a line in the sand. It becomes a, you know, you're not taken seriously. Suddenly you go from, well, she's pretty smart and she plays competitive chess, to, oh, she's one of them.
Right. Now, you were also on Babylon 5, but what are you doing these days?
I'm rebuilding my house in Houston that got 4 feet of water from Hurricane Harvey.
Oh. Is it drying out?
It's drying out. It's apocalypse. Please don't forget us here just because we won the World Series.
Right. Oh, yeah. Thank you for that, by the way, for reminding the entire city of Los Angeles about that.
Tracy, I'm so sorry to hear about that.
Oh, thank you, Bryce. It's, you know, there's a plan, and I just have to roll with it.
Well, you know, and this is what was unbelievable, that when Houston happened, and I was actually, when it made landfall, I was live on the air here at Coast, and I was reporting and updating. I was here with Nathan that night, and we were reporting on it. But it was the succession. It was the Caribbean. It was Florida. It was Cuba. Later on in the month, it was the northern part of South America. And then, of course, New Orleans got hit. It was just the
right,
craziest
the earthquake and the fires in California.
All at the same
very,
time.
End times sort of feeling.
It was, and the two earthquakes in Mexico City, those were devastating. And then, of course, right here where Bryce and I live, Burbank was on fire.
And we're going to get our earthquake sooner or later.
Easy there, Bryce.
Yeah.
Easy there, Bryce.
Yeah.
Tracy, thanks for managing to get through on the phones tonight. And it was just a pleasure talking to you.
Love
Thank
you, Tracy.
So much.
Thanks.
And great, great, great hearing you, Bryce.
Take care.
Absolutely, bye-bye. Tracy. And all our thoughts are with everybody for the great state of Texas and Houston. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. We appreciate it. Thank you.
There you go, Bryce. That was a surprise call.
I feel like this is an episode of This Is Your Life, and I'm really thrilled. Tracy's a terrific actress. I'd put her in anything. She's wonderful, and the character she got to play was just such a hoot, so much fun, and she did a great job. And the fact that I got to act in my one scene with her, I feel like that's pretty good.
Well, where'd you graduate high school?
I went to Hillsboro, Oregon.
That's right.
Yeah.
Do you remember Greg Jeffries in history class? He is here now. Greg, come on in.
This Is Your Life. This is incredible.
It's such a treat to have you live in the studio. Now, we have a ton of phone calls,
sure.
So we're going to get to all of those next. I've got questions lined up on Twitter. This is Coast to Coast AM. Our guest tonight is Bryce Zabel, and this is what is the most important thing for all of us. And I just want to drive this home, and it is this. Whatever is going on out there when it comes to E.T., E.T. is wondering the same thing about us. Disclosure is real. He has written about it. We're going to be talking about this for the rest of the night, and we're going to be taking your phone calls. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. This is Coast to Coast AM.